Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Chris Loffrey. Lori Walsh is off today. David Zellmer has served two full terms as the Bishop of the South Dakota Synod. He's not eligible for re-election. What does his future hold now, and what direction is he going to take in life moving forward? David Zellmer joins us today from inside the Kirby Family Studio in downtown Sioux Falls to do a little reflection on the past 12 years. Mr. Zellmer, welcome back.
Good to be back.
First of all, it's really good to see you. You've been here on many, many capacities. We've always appreciated your time on this show, and this is just going to be you and I talking today and reflecting on your career as the bishop. And let's go back to 2007 when it all started, and maybe even 2006, and I'm not real sure how it works to become the bishop if you got a campaign and all that stuff, whatever the case may be. So my question to you is, along those lines, what was your aspiration to become the bishop?
Well, I'd had a number of people talk to me about that possibility, and at a certain point, you have to pay attention to that. I'd been nominated 12 years before that, back in 1995, mm-hmm. and chose to not leave my name in at that point. Just thought I was too young and didn't have enough experience, and had little kids, so I decided not to leave my name in. But kids were out of the home, and I'd been in peer at that point almost 14 years. Mm-hmm. And so paid attention to the people that talked to me and made the decision to leave my name in.
So let's go before that. What made you get into the ministry profession?
Oh, that's a long story, but we don't have that much time.
Sure,
but the short
sure.
version is it just seemed that's the way that life should go. I was a pretty reluctant seminary student, but pathways seemed to be pretty clear after a while. And all of my career as a pastor has been in South Dakota. Had a great, great time, over 38 years here.
So you step over the threshold of being the bishop in 2007. What were your thoughts and your visions and your dreams for the synod?
Well, I knew going in for sure that we were going to have about 60% of our pastors retire.
Oh.
When I started, that would happen by the time I was done, and it's actually about 63%. Hmm. So that's about 140 plus people. So right. I knew that recruitment was going to be main foci of the work that we were going to have. And then we discovered about 2011 that people didn't actually want to come to South Dakota to serve. And so you kind of combine those two pieces, and life was interesting for a while.
Why didn't they want to come here?
Well, a lot of our seminarians now come from metro areas and great big churches. So we have great big churches, but we don't really have very many metro areas in South Dakota. So when I started hearing from really bright people that they were looking for a rural call, and they thought Sioux Falls was just the ticket, and had to explain to them that was not really rural in South Dakota's eyes, and I could show them rural, but that wasn't it.
Can you talk? I'm really interested now because I never even thought about this when you brought up recruitment.
Yeah,
let's talk about that a little bit. What's that like, recruitment? How do you recruit?
Well, you start having conversations with people when they're young. My first time someone talked to me about that, I was probably a seventh grader. Hmm. Happened again when I was in high school and again in college. And here we are. Same thing happens at our Bible camps. That's a great place for those conversations to take place. From our last campaign, we just finished up a campaign. We've been able to hire a young man who does that full time for us, does recruitment, where he talks to high school, college students, spend time at our Bible camp, particularly with our camp counselors and program directors.
So then does that take you or the next out of the equation then, or not really?
Oh, no. No,
I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. We're still part of the process. Invite them into the many different pathways now to get educated and serve the church.
What's the time frame like once you think you want that person?
It would depend on their age.
Okay.
Let's say they've graduated from college. Mm-hmm. Almost all of our pathways are four years long.
Okay.
3 years of study, and then we have a year of internship where you practice, and you have a supervisor who watches over you. And then you need a call from a congregation to be able to get ordained, mm-hmm. and to serve the church in that capacity.
Can we get into what the difference is, let's say, between rural ministry and metro ministry, if that's the right term? I think you know what I mean.
Well, yeah. It depends on where you're at. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're in one of our county seat communities, like, say, Mobridge or Chamberlain, mm-hmm. means you've got a small hospital, a small hospital. You're going to be a community leader in a different way than you would be, say, in Sioux Falls. Mm-hmm. You're going to know your superintendent of schools. You're going to know your sheriff. You're going to be a key figure in being that community leader amongst other community leaders.
So let's talk about some of the things you've done prior to being the bishop. Talk about your service prior to 2007.
Well, I started out at rural Aberdeen. I served at Two Point Parish out in the country. We mm-hmm. lived in the country. I was also the chaplain at the nursing home at Bethesda in Aberdeen. We were there for 4 years and then went to Trinity in Mitchell. Was over on the east side of town, and we were there for 8. We had our last child there, so we got 4 kids. And then we went to Pier in 93, and we were there for just about 15 years.
Well, so then let's get back into the current role. What is the role in general of the bishop? I mean, again, we don't have all this time.
Right.
But in a nutshell, like you said earlier, what is the bishop responsible for?
I have administrative duties. I've got a staff, great staff. We're responsible for the administration of the files on congregations to help them stay organized. And then also the files on roster files for our rostered leaders, the pastors and deacons that have been invited to serve in South Dakota. So we keep track of them, work with them over time, tend to their education, continuing ed. Can't mm-hmm. force them, but we can support it and encourage. And then just make sure that part of it is dealing with conflict. I mean, probably a third of my work is dealing with conflict in congregations.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is David Zellmer. He's the bishop of the South Dakota Synod. He's served his 12 years, and he's going to pass that torch very soon to somebody else. And we're going to get into a few things that you've managed to do while you're as bishop. And tell me about being invited by the U.S. Surgeon General's Task Force Call to Action to Prevent Suicide. That's interesting.
Oh, that was, well, in Pier, we were experiencing a number of teenage suicides that had been completed. And in 90... Really, about 98, we started working actively to prevent them. We did some, I think, really good work in Pier and Fort Pier, and had a significant impact on how kids behaved and how they were able to live with us and how we behaved and how we treated children in Pier, Fort Pier.
I'm sure you can recall that keynote speech as you were the keynote speaker.
Right.
Tell me what your message was.
Well, I would say that the central message was for adults that I encourage them to pick one of three things. Every kid needs somebody that looks like a parent for their lifetime. Every kid needs somebody that looks a lot like grandma and grandpa. And every kid needs somebody that looks a lot like the next door neighbor. And so just invited people in Pier along with other community leaders that you should pick one of those roles and pick some kids to live that out with. And yeah, made a difference.
When you were finished with that, and as you were walking out, what was the reaction? What were people saying to you after they listened to what you said?
Oh, well, yeah, it was an interesting day. It was a long day.
Yeah,
out in Seattle, and had a lot of questions. When communities get into those kind of situations, mm-hmm. they regularly think, well, if we get just the right person to come, they can fix it for us. Mm. I mean, I think the main thing that we learned is that nobody was going to ride over the hill and on a white horse and save us, that we as a community just needed to treat our children differently. How are we going to take care of them in ways that were effective and meaningful for them?
We'll move on to the next topic, and things I listen to every day, and it's seminary debt reduction. I find this pretty, because I mean, the debt that children, or kids, I should say, or young adults, let's just say that, are coming out of college is just astronomical.
Right.
So you had a part in the seminary debt reduction. Talk about that.
Well, again, we knew we needed to make South Dakota more pleasing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're having a hard time getting people to come here, we needed to do everything we could to help them stay and do so in a meaningful way. So when we started seeing debt loads go up over 60,000, the seminarians that were coming to serve, and then we started having a few people over 100,000, we knew we had real problems. Mm-hmm. So very early on, I took a program that my predecessor had started, Bishop Andrea, and we worked really hard at raising money for seminary debt reduction. But then when we got to a place where we were able to give about $150,000 a year in seminary debt reduction, and we do it just like the Bar Association does it. Chief Justice Gilbertson built the same program for attorneys serving in rural communities. We could see that we still weren't making the impact that we needed. So we had three bankers that are friends of mine. We together, along with Jim Shady, put together a seminary debt refinancing. And that really has made the huge difference. So we've got money that we can pay off that seminary debt. We asked them to sign a new note at 3.75. And then I have a donor that pays that interest every year. So their seminary debt effectively goes to zero on interest. And then they can still apply for the seminary debt reduction. So we've got about 15 people that are in the program right now, a total of 18. And three of them have already paid off all of their debt. I mean, it's just been a huge impact.
You were influential in getting Interfaith Day started at the state capitol. Talk about Interfaith Day.
Well, historically, I can't even find the beginning. Lutherans have always had a Lutheran Day out at the legislature. Betty Oldenkamp, who is the president of LSS, she and I are very good friends. I serve on the board. We were doing the Lutheran Day together the past several years. And then we started seeing some legislation that was pretty disturbing all about 3 years ago that it started showing up. So 2 years ago, in January of, 17, we had our first Interfaith Day. So we invited judicatories from other denominations, and then we worked pretty hard through my communications director to find leaders from other faith communities. So the Muslim community and Buddhism, and well, back then we didn't have a Hindu community yet, but and we gathered together out in Pier and celebrated the First Amendment, which is there, I think, to protect all of us. And it allows us to engage in our faith or lack thereof in ways that we find appropriate. So it's been very successful.
You've worked immensely to bridge cultures with the Lakota communities as well. In the remaining minutes we have, talk about that.
Well, it's been actually a lifelong piece for me. I mean, since I've been in South Dakota, we're a state that has the most reservations of any state in the country. So throughout my ministry, there have been opportunity to work alongside Lakota people, and it has been a gift, truthfully, both when I was in Aberdeen and then in Mitchell and then out in Pier. We currently have a retreat center down in Pine Ridge, in the community of Pine Ridge, and that's, 27 years. So we continue to support and be engaged that way. And we're working on building a retreat center in North Rapid. At our Native American congregation location.
So in the remaining about a minute and a half we have left, and I just want to thank you for your service, first of all.
Thanks.
And in my devotionals this morning, I thought of you right away, and because the first sentence was, what does heaven look like?
Yeah.
What images come to mind when you think of heaven? And I'm going to ask you that. What in your mind, Bishop Zellmer, what does heaven look like?
Well, when I was a little kid, you know, I mean, you had images, you know, of this old man sitting on a throne somewhere. Today, at where I'm at in my life, I've got dear friends, both parents, grandparents that have passed away. And to me, heaven is that place where Christ invites us to back into a different part of the community, and we get to see people that we've longed for and look forward to greeting once again.
Well, I got time for one more thought. What, in just less than a week, you're doing something different.
No, I'll have this job until September 1st.
Okay.
So we, by Saturday afternoon, late afternoon, we'll have a bishop elect. And the plan currently is that they'll come on salary on August 1st. We'll have a month of overlap. We'll have a national churchwide convention in that month. I've got a couple more things to get done over the course of this summer, and then I'll hand the reins off on September 1st.
After that, what's next? Any thoughts on that yet?
I've got 4 months of not working.
David Zellmer is the current bishop of the South Dakota Synod. His time is up, and he's going to move on, as we just heard. Thanks for your service so much, and we appreciate you being on In the Moment today and every other time you've been on.
You bet. It's been a privilege. Appreciate it.